Let me read to you 1 Peter chapter 3. By the way, the first six verses are Peter at the end of his life giving instruction to women. The seventh verse to men, and then to everyone, 8 and 9 and on. And you might say, why is there a disparity? How come women have to have six verses and men only one? Well, maybe men don't read very much and don't pay much attention. He had to put it all in a succinct place. Or maybe, and this is probably the most accurate, in the first century church, women were in a very hard place. If men got saved, their whole family would follow them. If women got saved, their husband might throw them out, and they would be destitute. And so Peter was trying to instruct women that were coming to Christ what type of behavior was acceptable in God's sight. And so he had to write a lot more because there was a lot more pressures socially upon them than there were upon the men. Because in the first century era, before the gospel had its power, women were the very bottom of the bucket of society. And Christ elevated them, and the Christian church elevated women, and the whole Christian effect on society gave women so much more standing. But let me read to you in 1 Peter chapter 3, because I want to show you what I'm talking about in this special preciousness that God is looking. It says, in this way also, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands. He says in Ephesians 5:22, the verse that women always get hit over the head with, you know, wives, submit to your husbands. The only problem is, if you read that real closely, submit is in italics. It's not in that verse. It says, husbands, love your wives, and likewise, wives to your husband. There's no submit in there. It's a good thing that 1 Peter 3:1 has it, or someone would get upset. But the Bible says all of us are to submit to one another, but Peter specifically zeroes in on women. He says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, and some of you this morning could shake your heads, yes, they're very disobedient to the words. They're not here with me this morning. They never go to church. They never crack a Bible. They say they're a Christian. They don't do anything. They don't raise the children. They never read, you know, on and on you could go. But even if any of them are disobedient to the word, listen, they may be won without a word. You don't have to put Jesus saves in the bottom of their beer cans. You don't have to stuff tracts in their lunchbox. You don't have to, you know, to change their radio in their car to Christian radio. They can be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Verse 2 is very interesting. We're going to look more deeply at this in just a moment, but I just want to comment on the way by. That word observe is a word that is totally used in all of the ancient world for athletic events. And it speaks about when a crowd would rise up to look at an athletic event when, say, if you're ever at a football game and everyone starts standing and moving, what you see is a great play is happening. Maybe a touchdown is being made or some strategic moment. You all have to stand and move to get a view of what's happening. This is a moving word, and it speaks athletically of them intently staring on the wife, looking at her as she is triumphing. It's very interesting. Wherever your husband is spiritually, women, if you're even married, and have a man watching you, if you have the behavior the Bible describes, whether they publicly acknowledge it or not, they are watching you. And they are observing your chaste and respectful behavior. And then he goes into this. Verse 3, let not your adornment be merely external. And there's another italicized word. Merely isn't in the text. It says, let not the focus of your adornment be external. Now, he doesn't say, leave yourself to, you know, fly to the winds, but he says, don't let the focus of your life be to look beautiful externally. And then he describes what was going on in the first century, braiding the hair. Now, that's not braiding the hair as in just taking three strands. It's interweaving gold, which is what they did back then. Some women, Pliny and others record, had upwards of $10-15 million worth of wealth woven in. Caligula's wife had $40 million worth of pearls and rubies. I can just imagine her walking around like this, you know, with all that gold. Probably he was trying to kill her. He'd push her in the water. But don't let your adornment be external, braiding the hair, wearing of gold jewelry. And what that speaks of is luminescent glitterings. It says, don't be dangling and glittering gold in your hair and all around, or putting on of dresses. Now, he's not promoting nudity here. What he's saying is, and this is a word, another strange word, that's only used here in the New Testament. It speaks of someone that they keep changing their clothes so often to show how many clothes they have. And they used to have extended banquets that would last for hours, and these women would keep running in the side room, putting on a new outfit, walk out, let everybody ooh, and then he'd run back in, put on another outfit. And he's saying, don't have the focus be on externals. Don't show off your wealth with your gold. Don't show off how many dresses you own. But here's what we're getting to, verse 4. But let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is, and there's the word from Mark 14 that we read at the beginning, which is precious, enopion theon, before the face of God. What this verse says is very interesting, that God has moved his eternal, infinite, omnipresent face right in front of each of you women. Now, Peter applies this specifically to women, although in principle form, we can say it's true for all of us. But God has moved himself right up, enopion, face to face. That speaks of when people were making an agreement, they would lean over a table and they would look each other right in the eye and stare at each other. It speaks of the fact that when there was a reconciliation taking place, that they had to come to the place where they would look each other in the eye and face each other, and they could look and read one another's demeanor to know whether or not they were serious about the affair that they were making, the agreement, the reconciliation. And it says that God has moved face to face with each of you ladies. And what he's looking for is whether or not the primary focus of your life is to have people looking at you outwardly, or whether or not you're concerned that the inward person that you truly are, that God can see most clearly, is precious before him. God says that to him, he does not like the luminescent, glittering, gaudy, immodest, provocative showiness that culture puts upon women. He says, be different. I'm looking. I'm coming face to face with you to see whether or not you have that which is precious in my sight. I'm watching you all the time. Did you know this morning, you will never probably live in Bethany? It's an Arab village now. You can't even drive through it in Israel with a bus. It's off limits. They throw rocks at you. You will never get to go to dinner at Simon the Leper, the Pharisee's house. You'll never get to take a little box of alabaster. You'll never get to dump it over Christ's head and to show your absolute lavish love upon him. Never. But today, that same Lord is looking each of you ladies full in the face and saying, you can give me something equally as precious.